Welcome back to PlayStation Podcast. I'm Sid Schumann, your host.
Oh, yes.
Are we going with this? And we've got Ryan Clements over there giggling away.
Hello, sir.
Throwing me off my game. That's why this is the third intro we've done. It's because of Ryan.
Oh, it's my fault now.
And his judgmental looks.
Interesting.
That's right.
Here's a judgmental look for you.
And then you got your Justin Massengill sitting
over
there.
How have we made it to 253 episodes of this train wreck?
We just hung on real tight.
Justin, I don't know what you're talking about. This is the finest programming you can find online.
And not only online, but on Spotify, on iTunes,
wow.
On Stitcher, on SoundCloud.
Let's just keep plugging all the different platforms you can listen to the show on.
So the Spotify thing is cool. I know people have been asking for it for a long time, but it allows you to listen while you play your favorite PlayStation 4 game.
There you go. We've had a lot of people asking for us to make the show available on PlayStation 4 for you to be able to listen to it on console. You can do that now via Spotify.
Well, there you go. Done.
Problem solved. Boom. Next request.
Box checked.
Next request. Cancel the show. Oh, we can't do that.
Okay, well, got a big old show.
Give
actually,
the people, what they want.
Kind of a loosey goosey show, if I can be frank about
yeah,
it. We're gonna breeze through some news that you can use. It's kind of a quiet release week next week, so we're just gonna keep moving through that. We've got some listener letters. We got some banter. We got some
what are you playing kind of thing.
We got some frolicking.
Oh, I'll tell you what
lined
I'm playing.
Up. No, you won't.
Sid is hosting. He's running the train.
Get ready for it.
Let's just kind of roll through some of the big news headlines that have come out here recently, because there's one that is weighing heavily on me, to put it lightly.
Weighing
Pinball
heavily.
FX3 coming to PlayStation 4.
That's the one.
Why is it weighing? Isn't that a cause for celebration?
Sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just, it's burning a hole in my mind. Now, I didn't actually...
It occupies your thoughts night and day.
Pinball FX, Justin. I see that this is a big update for Zen Pinball, and it sounds like they're aiming for sort of community-level features. So I'd like you to explain all of that to me right now.
Yeah, sure. Well, we've got a great post on PlayStation blog written by the team at Zen. They've got a trailer in there with it. They're calling it the next step in the evolution of pinball. So bold claims from the team at Zen.
Is it a scenario where it's like an MMO and each player controls like a flipper or a bell or a bumper?
I don't think that's quite what's going on here.
That's a good idea, maybe for Zen Pinball 4.
They are talking... this is not a titled Zen Pinball. It's Pinball FX3.
They're going back to the FX branding.
Yeah, they are. But your Zen Pinball 2 tables will carry over.
Oh, okay.
So it's a new platform, lots of community-driven stuff. They have some stuff in there, some single-player stuff, where they actually want to help players get better at pinball. I don't know. I guess it's going to be like some lessons or like training modules or something. But
Will that equate to real pinball lessons, or like you're getting better at the game?
I mean, I think that if you get good at these games, some of that translates into real world experience. Obviously, it's different if you stand in front of a real table because they slant differently, and you know it feels a little different.
You got to move your hips just so as you rock that table back and forth.
You got to just slam your pelvis into that table.
No, I mean, have you ever done?
Holy jeez,
this
guys.
Is off the rails. Already. But you ever play? If you've played real pinball before,
yeah.
Justin has, and
oh,
you,
yeah.
have you ever tilted?
You really got it.
You
got to like
gotta work those. Hips.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no joke.
It's all in the hips.
But it's those things are like 500 pounds, and so you really gotta hold on tight. You gotta kind of shimmy back and forth. Right. Ryan's lost it.
So Pinball FX3, it's coming to PlayStation 4. It looks great. Thanks.
What are the community features, though? Explain.
Let me see. So I've got the blog post pulled up here. Lots of leaderboard type stuff going on here. Sorry, you're putting me on the spot here.
But let's go. We have a lot of new
built around
to get
built around multiplayer matchups, user generated tournaments, and league play. Pinball FX3 is now so much more than leaderboard rankings. The game elevates the competitive pinball spirit that has thrived since the early days of pinball.
Read the blog post, Justin.
You're putting me on the spot.
That's
what do you
right.
want me to do here?
Well, it sounds like there's
what
some.
What do you want from me?
There's user created tournaments. That sounds cool. Some other cool stuff too.
I love pinball.
It was actually.
Pinball's fun.
So in the spectrum of news that you can use,
yeah.
there's a lot of plus stuff that I want to go through a little bit here, and you can find the full details on PlayStation blog, but I will say that July 2017, your free plus games include that they're Until Dawn.
Whoa.
What?
It's a spook fest, I tells you.
That's You're out of control.
We're all in a very weird mood today, I can tell.
Until Dawn is a big deal to have it that is. Free. If you have not played Until Dawn yet and you are a Plus member, get on that download.
I think that's a great candidate for a Plus game because it became kind of a cult hit after it came out. Lots of word of mouth, lots of people talking about how great it was, and lots of people saying, huh, I should go check that out. Well, now you can for free.
Exactly, and for members only, though, Justin.
Of course.
Legal Lions. For Legal Lions.
Let me toss that disclaimer in there every time I say the word free.
That's right. The it's got a great cast. The visuals are actually still some of the best you'll see on PS4.
Yeah. It looks really good.
Gorgeous. And uses Gorilla's technology, Decima.
I did not. Are you sure?
Is that true?
That?
Yes. Well, Mark Cerny told me that at E3. So it's in our official video that went through all the clearance. So I'm sure it's official.
You're breaking news here.
And, exclusive.
And I will say that much like the next game we're going to talk about, player choice plays a huge role in Until Dawn because life or death, it's all up to you. Just like Game of Thrones,
I choose
a Telltale
life.
Game series, which is also, and it's the full series, which is free for PS Plus members.
Beefy.
On PS4 next month. That's in July.
And that's got, so Until Dawn for PS4, Game of Thrones, a Telltale series for PS4. Mm-hmm. And the
Winter
game,
is coming, asterisk, in the game.
Yeah, there's a lot of, well, there's actually a lot of winter coming across the board. Both of these games are wintry themed.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Game of Thrones, they actually used the voice cast.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They got Dinklage in there?
I think there's a Dinklebot or two in there floating around.
His sounds suspect.
His video game Subject voice acting change. Career is taken off.
Subject to change without notice. Now, you play, I believe, the Forrester family?
Yes.
Sworn to House Stark?
Yes.
If I am not mistaken.
I know anyway. Cersei's in it. Okay. She's featured prominently in their artwork. I haven't played it, actually. I've been holding off because season 7's almost here.
Yeah, I mean, it is actually like perfect time.
It is perfect time.
For season
Are there
7.
Are dragons?
Dargons, yes.
Are there swords?
I mean, I don't know if they are in the game, but...
So, Justin, just a quick aside here. So, for multiple years, we've been like, Justin, you got to watch Game of Thrones. It's like the best show ever made. It's so incredible. So, he watches a couple episodes. He's like,
A couple episodes? Try a couple seasons.
Mm-mm.
How many seasons?
Two. I watched two seasons.
Two full seasons?
I got about 3/4 of the way through the second season.
So, 1/4 of the way through.
What?
You know how it is with TV shows.
No, what are you talking about?
But he just can't.
I watched all of season 1, and I watched like 8 episodes of season 2.
Couldn't stick with it.
You were fast approaching a point where even more spoilers than you could have possibly imagined will begin assaulting your face.
Except I already know everything that happens in the show because people can't shut up about it on Twitter every time a new episode airs.
But then you have to watch it.
Yeah, you got to watch it.
No, I don't. I just stay on Twitter, and I know everything that happens.
Well, then if you aren't going to watch the show.
But then I have to, sorry for the inside baseball talk, but I simply can't resist. But despite all of that, refuses to prep that blog post that has the full guide for season, our big season 6 guide.
Because I'll probably eventually go back and watch the show. Just like, I'm not like super into it like everybody else in the world is. I don't know. It just didn't hook me.
If you just shave off one little hour a night off your Final Fantasy... That still leaves like I'd 9 hours. It still leaves like 9 hours of that.
I refuse.
And you just take a little.
Those hours add up. That's a cumulative like 50 hours of game time I'm giving up.
You still have to watch. You really should watch.
It's
show.
Like your duty to watch it.
Look,
here's the thing. I watched One Punch Man. I watched it twice.
Okay, well, how long did it take you to watch One Punch Man?
I mean, like
5 hours?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll watch 5 more episodes of Game of Thrones.
Exactly. You do that, and then you're hooked.
If Justin's line is. I'm not. It's a shrug, and I might watch it one day. Then I am now releasing spoiler gate,
and we are
allowed to talk about whatever we want.
That's right.
At this point, I know so many things about who dies, who doesn't die. Who
Cersei drowns Peter Dinklage in a toilet. In season 4, she don't you remember that scene?
I know about all the like the death fakeouts that happen. I know all that because there was like huge end of season cliffhangers, like is the person dead? And then at the next season, like they're actually back. Like
I love that it's Cersei drowns the actor and not the character.
When I watched Game of Thrones, I was like, yeah, this is a pretty good show, but it. I never would get home and think, man, I really want to watch an episode of Game of Thrones. And never did an episode end, and I thought, man, I need to watch another episode.
You and I are very different people, Justin Massengill.
very different.
When's that Rick and Morty coming back?
Please. Yeah, give me more of that. I'll watch some Rick and
Morty. That's a fantastic show. I saw Dan Harmon was on.
Give me some more Westworld. That show's good.
So you like Westworld?
I loved Westworld.
What's the...
Holy smokes, we're rabbit-holing here.
This is what this show is about. Come on.
So, ladies and gentlemen, besides the plus lineup, we have a couple other plus items, including, I'll save the big one for the end, but... Orcs Must Die Unchained is out July 18th. I'm a big Orcs Must Die fan.
This one looks good too.
If y'all haven't played Orcs Must Die, get ready. If you are a plus, it's a free to play game, and if you are a plus member, you get like a ton of stuff like skins and in game currency just if you're a plus member. So please do. I encourage you to check it out. July 18th.
Rolling out that plus golden carpet.
Whoo dog! And then last but not least, Sid. There is a bonus on that there,
bonus,
PlayStation Plus.
Bonus,
and that's
bonus.
You. That's
Sid,
you.
Me? I'm a
no.
bonus?
That's you.
That's you. Yeah, the PlayLink game that we announced back at E3. Mm-hmm.
I had no idea this was already like about to launch.
It's out on Tuesday.
That's right.
Dang.
Mm-hmm. This is, as a big fan of all those Telltale games, the Telltale Jackbox games,
Telltale Jackbox games.
Telltale Jackbox games.
What are you talking about?
Telltale doesn't make the Jackbox games.
I don't know. I just had the biggest brain fart.
Jackbox makes the Jackbox games.
What are you talking
about? To be fair,
Telltale does have a mode where lots of people can band together to influence the decisions that happen in their games.
So Telltale actually does some distribution for.
Do they?
Jackbox, yes.
Okay, well, they don't.
It's weird that I put that in there like that, though. I don't know where that came from, but there is. It's not totally out of nowhere. I mean, there is like a relationship.
There's like a tenuous link there.
a slender thread. That is weird that I said that, though.
A gossamer thread?
A gossamer thread. Anyway, as a big fan of those there Jackbox party packs, I'm very excited to see what That's You is going to bring to the table.
Sid, we got to get this craziness. We got to keep it rolling with those listener letters. Now, let me give some context for listener letters, if I may. Last time, I asked all of you, what the heck are some good games to inaugurate, to initiate a new little baby gamer?
Final Fantasy 14.
Definitely not. Maybe the worst one. I had a lot of great letters written in here. I'll start with one, and then we'll get to some others here. But
Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus.
also definitely not. Yeah, for all you parents out there or expecting parents, now, what game do you start the kid with? But anyway, so here are some suggestions from Twitch writes, I have a pair of six-year-olds who are very into gaming and pretty much always have been. The games by That Game Company are excellent first games, but I would also like to recommend the Lego titles, especially Marvel Superheroes. They're really fun, easy, and forgiving. You said that you don't enjoy menu-based combat as much. Yes, I also said this last week. But if you didn't play Child of Light, I highly recommend it. The second controller can actually control a little Firefly that has minor effects on combat and can go get items for you without being in any danger. It's a fantastic journey to go through with your kid. Thanks, and talk to you later.
Oh, my.
Now, I have played and completed Child of Light.
Great, you finished it?
Yes, great nice. Suggestion. And so Twitch, Twyok. Thank you very much for the email. Now Leo 139 wrote in with more great suggestions, but then at the end of Leo's email gets to this. Sid, why don't you read this?
I would love to read this. I never understood the ideology of getting kids to play older games first so that they can appreciate, in quotes, newer games, graphics, and systems. It's like saying, we're letting Junior go through bloodletting via leeches as a medical treatment so that he can really appreciate modern medical techniques. Thoughts?
I mean, you're comparing the best, like the classic games of yesteryear to bloodletting via leeches.
So Leo, I love this. This cracked me up. So thank you for writing in, and I appreciated your suggestions. Playing classic games doesn't hurt anybody. Going backwards in medicine can hurt someone, but
I get the point that you're trying to make.
I would argue let's try and come up with some other comparisons, right? It's kind of like, okay, if you're, and this is not really not me, but I feel like it's apt. Say you really want to teach someone how to be like good at building things or working with their hands or working with wood or something like that, right? there is a certain charm and appreciation for the craft when you work purely with your hands, when you work with like hand tools, saws, hammer and, you know, hammers and stuff, as opposed to using all machines, like machinery.
Straight to the belt sander.
Right, which is like way more efficient, and you know, that's like where the modern advances are. But again, you sort of develop an appreciation for the craft by seeing some of the classical means of engaging with it. I think that's the same sort of thing here with games. Like, it's not like, you know, one is better than the other per se, although you could argue that modern games have made some huge strides. But you develop an appreciation for the craft, I think, when you look back at how far it's come. That was my argument.
I think
it's a good argument.
I think the way that I look at it, it's maybe slightly selfish, but if I have a kid, I want them to grow up and appreciate the same games that I appreciated when I was growing up. And like I want my kid to have that appreciation for those classic games. And I feel like if I start my child with newer generation stuff, it's less likely that they'll ever go back and actually play those, you know, like Super Nintendo, PS1 era games, because, you know, technically speaking and like technologically speaking, games have come a long way and they've become a lot more accessible, and the gameplay, like gameplay loops have become a lot more approachable, I guess, and make people want to play them more. So I feel like the simpler mechanics of older games are not as enticing these days, and not
but they're so enticing.
It's not something a kid raised on modern games will probably feel compelled to go back and play.
I think there's certainly an increased risk, but I do think like stuff like Castlevania Symphony of the Night or some of the true classics are always going to kind of be there hovering in the background. And you see this a lot with a lot of games. I mean, there's a whole episode I could riff about on this topic, but you know what, it's kind of like what goes around comes around. Like, things are very cyclical in art and in games. Like, so there are games that are coming out right now that would be perfectly at home 20 years ago.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't just mean some of the smaller independent stuff. I mean, like, there's bigger titles too that, you know, if you really peel away kind of the artifice and the sophistication and the hot 4K graphics, it's like still based on stuff from 10, 15, 20 years ago, and it's real good, but it's like, so it's I think, well, there's certain genres that had a particular moment, you know, 20, 30 years ago that,
like,
are less
the 3D collect-a-thon platformer, not as prevalent as they were, you know, 15 years ago.
Indeed.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a good example of what Sid is describing. My nephew, who just turned 7 years old, when we started introducing him to video games, I would bring my PS4 back home and show him all the games that I have, and we'd play a bunch of games together. But the one that he always wants to play, when I go back home and visit, he says, "Hey, can we play Shovel Knight? Can we play Shovel Knight?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we can play Shovel Knight." And he keeps me up to date as he's gotten to a point where he can beat the first level. So he's like slowly getting a little bit better at it, and he's so proud of himself when he's so excited to like get further into a game and see more of it after he spends so long practicing and learning and experiencing what the game has to offer. He beat the first level and he was like, "Yay, I did it!" And then he
there's
saw
like
the
50
whole
more levels.
The whole map opened up and he was like, "Oh, there's more,
way more." You know,
he's like, "Oh no!"
Yeah. Sorry, Ryan. I know you want to say something, but real quick on that point, I feel like there's kind of two schools of game design, and very broadly speaking, there's the more modern sort of big open, you know, collectibles, like adventure story. It's like everything in the kitchen sink. And then there's but it kind of is a games that are like good at like keeping you playing for a long period of time, like broadly speaking. So yeah, Destiny fits in there, but so does Assassin's Creed, and so does, you know, Mass Effect. It's just like these huge worlds. Then there's games where they're like very much based on your skill. And those are games like Shovel Knight, or even Dark Souls is kind of an interesting fusion of the
two. Street Fighter.
Sure, Street Fighter. But I mean, it's like, there is a magical feeling of like playing that Shovel Knight. Like, I grew up in arcades, and so I would play arcade games. And I remember that feeling distinctly of like, I finished the first level, and now what's going to happen? Like, it just takes forever to get to that point, so you appreciate it that much better.
I think that's why I love so many of the indie games that come out these days, because a lot of them focus on that skill-based gameplay that I feel like a lot of the AAA stuff doesn't cater to as much anymore. I miss that old arcadey style feeling of games, and I think that that kind of like zeroes in on part of the reason I really love independent games, because they're not afraid to focus on that kind of stuff. Like Fly Wrench was a recent example.
Strafe.
Of, yeah.
Boy, that's a great game, by the way, Ryan. Strafe.
Now it's my turn.
Yeah, please talk.
Because I had an amazing idea just now, okay? Let me posit this, okay? We all, I think, it's safe to say, appreciate film. Like, we all like movies. We like so.
Overrated.
Sure, Justin. But here's the thing, is that you can love film, you can actually start to really get engaged with the art form, you can start to study it, you can start to really look deeper and deeper into it, and not just on a surface level of like, hey, that was a good movie, but like start to really get into the art behind it.
Influences.
And then
cinematography.
Cinematography. And then you can go back and say, now I want to go watch Casablanca. I want to go watch Citizen Kane. Like, now I'm primed with my basic understanding and appreciation for film. I'm primed to go, like, now I want to see really where it all began and see, like, oh my gosh, look at, like, you know, how limited they were and how much they were able to do with it back then, all those years ago.
I feel like they weren't that limited, though. Like, the cameras that they're using to shoot movies now, sure, can capture in a higher resolution, and we have color now. They didn't have color, but the core of a film is the acting, and I feel like the acting skill of people in movies has not changed dramatically one way or the other.
The skill hasn't, the styles have, but the technology is a big part of it too, because it's not just about how good the acting is. I mean, we've always had stage and Broadway and all those, and that's hundreds if not thousands of years of tradition, but filmmaking is a unique thing because it's so much more dynamic. The framing of shots, the use of color, the light and dark,
and that's that
music.
artistry was has developed over time.
Oh, big
it
time.
Wasn't it did, Citizen Kane, like, it didn't just like
that's in the
you
40s
started
right?
with all of it.
Yeah.
I don't remember when
I think
it,
I believe
I mean,
it,
that said I watched The Godfather recently for the first time, and it has some of the best framing, like
sure.
some of the best camera work I've ever seen.
It's in the 70s though, that's like much further along, like they
yeah,
have much more sophistication.
I mean, it's closer to the beginning of film than it is to where we are now.
But let's not get started on the state of modern film, because that'll be quite the discussion.
But so this is my point, is that maybe I'm actually coming at it a little bit incorrectly, in that maybe the real way to get someone into an art form is to give them something that's approachable, that's easy, and that they can really understand, like, this is why this is great. And then when they understand that and they develop their own tastes, then you can say, now let me show you, like, really where all this came from. Because then you have that basic, like, enjoyment of it, and then you can kind of get a little deeper. So I think there's an argument to go both ways, to either start classic or to start modern.
I think either way you're good, and it's all about variety and trying all kinds of different
things. It's all about babies.
We can all agree that babies are where it's at.
Last but not least, a quick... Justin, why don't you get the quick aside from Nathan?
Yeah, Nathan writes, the first game I remember my daughter playing and comprehending was Pac-Man. She actually earned a few trophies from it.
Good job, Nathan's
daughter.
That's a good
choice. And I remember... I'm able to remember very early memories from my childhood, and I remember maybe not the first time I played Pac-Man, but one of the first. And I remember just being captivated by it and thinking it was like this whole world in there. Even it's so silly when you think about it, but it's like,
no, it's true.
I really was like, wow, like there's a little guy in there, and like
he's
what happened
around.
Like
some
where
of my
did he go?
Some of my earliest gaming memories are going to Pizza Hut and playing Pac-Man on the cocktail cabinets. So
yeah, the cocktail's the way to go. Yeah.
So tell
I want to own a cocktail cabinet.
Let's
so cool.
Here's the segment of the week. Let's put on our helmets and go into the Wayback Machine. What is the literal earliest memory of a video game you have?
Boy.
I'll start so you guys have time
start,
to think.
Yeah, start.
I'm sad that I can't remember the name, and I've actually told this story before years ago, but I remember sitting on my dad's lap at the computer, and it was a submarine game. It was like the barest of visuals possible.
Is it the one where you look through the periscope?
No.
Okay.
It's not, but I know what you're talking about. It was like a side scroller where as you go deeper, the tunnel that you're going through gets progressively thinner and it's harder to navigate. And it's like a one hit kill situation. And all I would do is man the gun. So I would just hit the one button to like fire straight ahead, and my dad would be piloting. And it was always like real iffy towards the end because he's trying to navigate the submarine down. And that, yeah, ever since then, I've always remembered that game. I wish I could remember the name.
I know the name of that game. The name of that game is R-Type.
No. It was not R-Type.
What? Not even close.
That was definitely a space shooter, Sid.
Okay.
And that come out that early. There are two ways I could answer this. There's the earliest memory that I have, which is kind of just like flashes of like images in my mind, which is my dad hooking up those weird old connectors, not even the RF, but before that. The little UHF? The little U-shaped prong things that
You had to like bolt them on. Yeah. I've seen them. I've never played around with
that. So we had an Atari, I think it was a 2600?
I think that's like an antenna connection.
Yeah, something like that. So we had an Atari. We hooked it up and played Pong, and I have very vague recollections of that, but I have a slightly more vivid memory of being at a friend's house and seeing Super Mario Brothers for the first time on their NES.
I remember that.
That's kind of what kicked everything off for me.
Yep.
For me, I am told that my first experience was Dragon's Lair in the arcade. I think there's a whole argument around how much of a video game is that really. It sort of is. I mean, it's very important to the history of video games.
It's the precursor to Detroit Become Human. It's a branching story.
In many ways, you're absolutely correct. It pushed Laserdisc technology into the forefront of the U.S. entertainment ecosystem.
Man, that Don Bluth animation is so underrated, too. Like, it doesn't get the love it deserves.
Did you ever see The Secret of Nim?
When I was a child.
You should see that movie. I think you would like that movie.
I've seen it, but I don't remember it.
It's such a random aside. But the game I really remember first. I mean, Pac-Man is very high on the list. You know,
there's no list. It's whatever was chronologically first, Sid.
Don't turn this into a list, Sid, please, for the love of God. No honorable mentions.
The honorable mention of memories that I have.
I don't know the first, but it was Dragon's Lair, but I don't remember playing it. I remember vaguely the cabinet and seeing some graphics.
I remember being horrified by Dragon's Lair because I saw some of the death animations when I was in like a movie theater watching somebody play the arcade. Watching the dude get like torched by a dragon and it's just his skeleton left and he falls and like turns into dust.
Yeah.
I was a little kid. I was so scared.
They're intense. It's a very visual game. I guess maybe
System Shock 2.
System Shock 2 is the first game I remember playing. Just a couple quickies that I remember.
Oh, there's God, Sid.
Galaga. There's
Sid. You can't turn this in. Every time I ask you for something, you can't name a billion things.
What's the one Konami game in the arcade that was like Galaga, but it was like you'd go around a tube?
Tempest.
No, it had the it had that song. You don't know that game? That's a good game. It's like Tempest.
Thanks, Sid.
Did you guys ever play the arcade version of Castlevania?
No.
It's called Haunted Castle. I've played it.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
And they turned that into Castlevania, yeah.
Huh.
It's exactly the same.
Speaking of which, how about that Netflix Castlevania series? How cool does that look? It's an anime. I didn't realize. And it looks like super violent.
Oh, really? I haven't seen
it. It looks awesome. It looks like super gory and like.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be great.
Speaking of classic arcade games, California Extreme is coming soon.
Ooh.
Still never been there.
Oh, Ryan, you should just swing down for a couple hours.
I never will be.
Just a couple hours.
Where is it again?
Santa Clara. It's not that far from here.
How far is Santa Clara?
I mean, it's like
it's about
half hour,
30 minutes south.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It's like San Jose area.
Yeah. It's just if you just come in, you'll go, whoa. It's like it'll make you feel like a kid again. Because, I mean, they have hundreds of arcade cabinets.
It started off as mostly pinball, but they've been getting more serious about having just general like classic arcade machines.
It is a treat. I was giddy when I first went the first year. It's really cool.
I just assume it's a pizza conference because of the word extreme.
That would be cool.
When is that? When is California?
I want a pizza
it's
conference.
Be really soon.
It's
man.
Coming up.
I remember it's like usually right after E3.
Gurgle that.
I'm gonna look it up. Fact-checking squad is on the case.
All right, well, that's all the content we had for today, so what are we playing?
Let's all rattle off the five favorite games I ever played.
Wait, first, first, to our dear listeners, tell us what your earliest memory of a game was and what it meant to you.
Yes.
You can write to us, blogcast@sony.com. Again, that's blogcast@sony.com. Thank you.
July 29th and
30th. Oh, we got a little time. Got a little time. but, okay, so what are we playing? Okay, let me talk real quick about Strafe. Okay. Because Strafe is...
You did talk a lot about Strafe name last dropped week. It.
No,
last
week?
Yeah, we talked about
Do
it.
Do I have brain damage?
It's possible.
I mean, I think we ask that every week.
Let me just say that it's the game I keep going back to, and I keep going, I'm done with that game now. And then I go back to it, and I get a little bit further each time. Very fun. It's Spelunky meets Quake with a wonderful
Spelunky
soundtrack.
Meets Quake.
That's,
I love it.
That's what it is. It's Spelunky meets Quake.
That's listeners, so cool. Listeners, didn't Sid just talk about this?
Well, I'm saying
it's,
it again.
It's, hey, no problem. Because if you're still playing it, it's still valid.
It's a great game.
Anyway,
I can confirm
Final
that
Fantasy.
Sid did talk about Strafe last week because I listened to last week's show.
Oh, Justin.
You were saying, get the shotgun every time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. It was last week. Yeah, I wasn't crazy.
Well,
Sid was the crazy one.
That's right. I'm a crazy man.
You just got to get those hips into it.
So, but before I talk about Final Fantasy XIV Stormblood, well, Ryan and I will just touch on that a little bit. Shout out to Housemarque for Next Machina because that game is so good.
I haven't touched it yet.
It's out now?
Oh, it's out.
Okay.
Oh, it's out now. Buy now.
Sid, I'm surprised you're not crawling all over that like a termite swarm.
Yeah. I don't know why I haven't.
That game is.
I haven't played it.
That game is. Oh, it's really hard. It's like super frustrating. So if this. The fact that when you play on normal difficulty, the game gives you 99 continues to get through the game.
Oh, they do that whole move?
Yeah. So if you play on easy, I think it's unlimited. Normal, you have 99 continues. Hard, you get 10. Very hard, you get 5, I think. There's a trophy for one credit clearing the game, which is impossible. Nobody's ever going to get that trophy. Like, if somebody gets that trophy...
Somebody will get it.
Somebody will get it, obviously, but I don't see how it's even possible.
It's like a deep learning AI trophy.
It took me about 50 continues to beat the game, I think.
Oh, you did beat it?
On normal mode, yes. And it was a trying affair. It took me a long time, and it was really frustrating, especially near the end. Some of those bosses get ridiculous. But man, what a just... finely tuned, perfect, arcadey like action game. It is Housemarque at their best. They are at the top of their game here. If you thought Resogun was like difficult, no,
it's tricky.
Resogun is like training wheels for Next Machina.
Oh, the gauntlet has been thrown.
It is,
and this is Eugene Jarvis they worked with, who's the creator of Robotron.
Yep. So I can't recommend Next Machina enough. I can't believe that they have Matterfall coming out soon, too.
They have been prolific of late. They did Alien Nation maybe a year ago, and then here comes Matterfall and Next Machina.
So yeah, if you picked up a PS4 at launch and you played Resogun and you were into that for a while, like this is they've had some games between here and there, but I feel like this is like the true follow-up to Resogun that we've been waiting for. Like this is the Housemarque game that's just like grabbing me by the shoulders and shaking me relentlessly.
Grabbing me by the hips.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah. I was talking about tilting in pinball. You're making it weird.
Sid, this has been weird the whole time. besides Strafe, are you playing anything else that's new?
Justin is on me to finish Nier Automata. And
I can't believe you're so close to the end of that game, and you just stopped playing it like 2 months ago.
I don't want to spoil the wonderful experiences I've had with it. It's just like
you got to
Game
like some of the like super climactic stuff that's happening, and you just dropped it.
So it's like, yeah, I'll come back to this. Like, need a break. Yeah, I guess I'll wrap that up. I want to finish that.
I feel. I talked to you about this a little bit a couple days ago, Sid. But I feel it's a shame that you didn't finish Nier Automata when you were like into it, because I feel like it's going to lose some of the impact it would have had if you had played it straight through. Like dropping it for a month and then coming back and finishing it, like it's going to lose some of the weight that it would have had.
I don't know if I'd say that.
Into it then.
Because
I still have to get through it too.
So you got a little ways into the second round, right?
Yeah, I'm in the second
round.
So
I think you're still safe, but there's a certain point where once you get to it, it's just like a roller coaster to the end of the game.
Cool.
And Sid just like got off that roller coaster.
I hit the emergency button and dropped off the
screech. Hold on a second.
I got to use the bathroom. Well, it was right before E3, so you can't blame me too much.
Yeah.
But I do like that game a lot. I think the Nier Automata is going to be in discussion around Game of the Year time.
I think it's going to be my Game of the Year.
Justin, I think we really do need to give Sid like some credit here because he played a game that I literally would have never thought he would play.
I am really impressed that Sid managed to like finish one playthrough of that game, let alone make it almost to the end, like the true ending.
I tell a lot of people, anyone that has any interest at all in like Japanese games or that kind,
like
it's not even
games, yeah.
Or action games. I like go, oh, you should play Nier Automata. It's really good. And they go, yeah. And I'm like, you should play it. It's really good. Hmm. And then they go, I hear you have to play it 50 times. I'm like, yeah. The time invested decreases with each one considerably. So it's not. Don't freak
it's
out
not
too much.
So, yeah, you don't think about it as playing through the game over and over.
Again. You really aren't even. I don't even know why they call it that. You're really not playing.
I heard
through
somebody
the game.
Describe it as think of it less as playthroughs and
yes.
more like chapters.
Yes, that's a better way to look at it. And
the first and the second one are the ones that are closest together,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. And then it starts getting a little wonkier after that.
And then things
change. And, yeah, but the first two also take the longest. And you can make the game take forever if you want by doing every possible side quest. And I'm not as much of that kind of guy. But
after the first two playthroughs, it just becomes a NASCAR game. You're just like, whoa!
It's Cars 3, Driven to Win.
Whoa.
I mean,
you remembered the subtitle, too. Very nice.
I mean, you're not far off. That's all else.
Remember how it started off as like a top-down like cave shooter, and then it was a side-scrolling shooter, and then it was a side-scrolling platform, and then it was a 3D open-world action platform. Now it's a NASCAR game.
Yep. Perfect. Perfect transition. Taro-san, you're the best.
Genius
you're
work.
You're the best.
What else am Round. I playing? Oh, Death State. I think I talked about that already.
You
yeah.
did talk
I
about
like
that
Death game.
State.
I think that's
I really need to talk a little bit about Persona 5 because one of our commenters actually yelled at me, chided me in the comments a little bit because we had been looking forward to Persona 5 for so long and then we didn't talk about it on the show. I know that you shouted it out for me last week when I wasn't
I
here.
Did.
But I do want to talk just a little bit about how amazing of a game Persona 5 is. It is the most stylish thing that I've ever seen. Some of the best music, obviously, because you know the Persona games always have great music, and that tradition mm-hmm. continues here. I really am liking it a lot more than Persona 4 thus far. Persona 4 Golden was my first Persona game, and I liked it a lot. But I'm already way more into Persona 5. I think the characters are a lot more interesting, and the subject matter that they talk about has me a lot more invested in the overall story of the game. And it's a long game. Yeah, I'm at like 70 hours on my in-game timer.
Forget it.
And I have people telling me that I'm like halfway through the game.
Oh, jeez.
So, jeez. Yeah. It's amazing, though. It's so good. I wish that Stormblood wasn't out yet, selfishly, so that I could just like focus on Persona 5 and finish it. But, I mean, obviously.
You make those decisions for
obviously,
yourself.
Obviously, Final Fantasy, you know.
I every time I think about Persona, I think about that video you shared with me where it's like, you never see
it. It's Mo the Simpsons saying. One.
Yeah. I love it.
I love it. Ryan, let's take just a moment to talk about how much we love Final Fantasy XIV Stormblood.
What are you playing, Ryan?
I mean, that's pretty much it.
Stormblood?
Yeah, because I log in for like 25-30 minutes before I go to bed, and that's all the time I have.
Have you
that's
tried
it.
Either of the
that
new
and
jobs?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Sorry to cut you off. No.
That's okay.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, great show, by the way.
It's a fun show.
We're
it's
like,
a great
we're
show.
In the final, well, the current season now, finally, and it's awesome. Strongly
very
recommended.
Funny.
Very funny. Move on. G said, I guess someone is the only one that's allowed to repeat themselves on the show.
I'm just saying, I agree. Mm-hmm. I didn't want you to lose your momentum, and I was worried that you might.
So, as a lot of people know, I'm super weird about playing, in general.
You're not as weird as me.
About playing video games. And Justin was just like, we were just making fun of, we were both making fun of me for this, in which Justin's like,
in this case, it's kind of an extreme
example. Are you playing the story? Are you playing the new classes? And I was like, no, I'm playing one of the old classes.
He started leveling up a gladiator.
And it's just one of the original. It's not even, okay, it's not from Stormblood. It's not from Heavensward.
It's from a
Realm
Reborn.
Realm Reborn. Yeah.
And it's probably the least favorite character that you wanted to play.
No, that's partially true. But I was pretty psyched because I like paladins.
I think Ryan has talked about this on the show, but Ryan has a fixation with, here's all these wonderful characters I could play. Let me find the one I want want to play the least.
And then start with it.
And that's where Ryan will go.
The problem in that strategy is that you're never going to get to the ones you actually want to play.
I know, but now I have this like library of cool experiences I have still in.
And you're like, well, I don't like the... My experience has been terrible with this game because I hate this character, but if I ever play it again, I'll have the second worst character I can go to, and that'll be an upgrade.
Oh, it'll be a huge upgrade.
I mean, do you look at like fighting games that way? Like...
Actually, with fighting games, sometimes I'll just be like, I'm just going to play this one character. And then I have all these other characters that I'll learn eventually. But that's not how you
never
play
get to
a fighting
it,
game, because you really need to know everybody.
Ooh,
but.
Ooh, speaking of which, Injustice 2, very good.
Tekken 7, very good.
There's some killer fighting games coming out recently.
The story in Injustice 2 was surprisingly fantastic.
Yeah, it's like AAA storytelling. It's terrific. I mean, it's come a long way since.
I didn't really like the story in the first game, but this one I really enjoyed.
The Mortal Kombat 9, as they often call it, the 2011 Mortal Kombat game really kicked us off, and it was very experimental at the time this story, but it was really captivating and
it was
campy,
really fun.
But it was really so much fun.
Yeah.
And then they started building on it, and Injustice was the next one, and they tried to push it further, and then MKX came out, they pushed it further, and then I think Injustice has sort of the heavyweight right now.
I played through that whole single-player campaign in two sittings because I was so captivated by the
story. That's the other one I got to finish up. I'm far, though.
Sid, don't think you can take us away from Stormblood.
And then
you,
the final
you
thing.
You wily coyote.
And then the final thing is Tekken 7 addresses... Just real quick, Tekken 7 addresses the biggest issues I had with 6. Mm. So it is pretty much now my favorite Tekken. Because they do everything I wanted to do, and they got rid of a few mechanics like the bound mechanic and some of the really over-punishing combos. They really found good ways to work through that stuff without it turning into a different game. So it really is like a super de-duper version of Tekken 5, which is with all the niceties that they brought in since then without this stuff that was more annoying. So I really think Tekken 7, that's the one to play if you've been out of Tekken for a while or if you've gotten frustrated with Tekken. Tekken 7 fixes all of that and adds a lot of cool new stuff. So just plug for Tekken 7. It's great.
I know that I'm never going to play Tekken 7, so I went online and I watched the ending of the story.
Yeah.
No!
You found out
it's
how...
the end of the clan storyline.
Does it come to a rousing conclusion, would you say?
Sure. I don't want to get into details in case anybody hasn't, like...
I can't think of a game series that I know less about the story than the Tekken series.
All I know is they've been playing off the whole, like, the end of the family feud. It's Heihachi versus Kazuya, right?
Yeah, that's it.
And I just wanted to know who won, so I went and I
watched. Did they throw each other into a volcano this time?
They just, like, hugged and, like, fell into the...
That would be good.
It ends with them just saying, you know what? I was wrong. Just hugging it out.
Well, I don't... Over the years, the Tekken games for the various endings of the characters, it became this sort of one-upmanship between Heihachi and his son Kazuya. It begins with Heihachi dumping Kazuya... No, it's Kazuya dumping Heihachi off a cliff in Tekken 1. Tekken 2 is Heihachi dumping Kazuya off a cliff. And then it turns into dumping into
they
volcano.
They just keep on finding higher and higher cliffs.
Strapping to rocket and launching into outer space. Literally, I mean, it just got really out of control over the years. So it's
I feel
about
like
time.
At a certain point, there was a certain point where the series just kind of became a parody of itself, and it's come back down a little bit.
Yeah,
it's still pretty ridiculous, but it's come back to some sense of normalcy.
As a father, I couldn't imagine throwing my son into a volcano.
Well, he's a big, muscly, scarred, evil person. Not
could
like
you
a little baby.
Could you imagine he's your son strapping? Your could you imagine your son strapping you to the side of a rocket ship?
Yes.
So Stormblood.
So we're all out of time. So thanks for listening to PlayStation Broadcast.
Speaking of great stories, I am near the end of the main scenario quest in Final Fantasy XIV Stormblood.
MSQ.
Email us at blogcast@sony.com.
Give us a few minutes.
The story in Stormblood is shockingly good. The story was never really the strong suit of Final Fantasy XIV compared to other, you know, JRPG games and, you know, story-centric games. It was pretty good. Yes, this is a really good MMO story, but I feel like we're getting to the point now where, especially Heavensward made a lot of advancements.
I think Heavensward it wasn't just good for an MMO. I think it was just good.
I think it was good, and the story in Stormblood, I think, is great. It really just kind of takes it this step further. Heavensward had a really interesting, like, overarching story with lots of compelling lore,
and that's why it got into
the history of what had happened and built the world really well. Stormblood puts a focus on the characters, which I think is really interesting. I love a good character-driven story, and I think that this falls into that category. And it's actually got a lot of like political intrigue as well, which. I actually like am really impressed by some of the political level stuff that they pull off in this.
Let's think about how Stormblood is actually the perfect Justin game. Sid is just disengaged completely now.
I'm listening.
No, that's fine. Keep doing your thing, big guy.
Sid's right. Over here just
look,
checking his
look,
phone.
Let's actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm on to something. Okay. We got Japan theme stuff in Doma, okay? Because Justin loves Japanese culture.
I'm gonna move my house to Shirogane as soon as
they
open.
There we go. Okay, we got character-driven story. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Justin loves that. We got cat girls. We have cat ladies. We have nods to time travel. Justin loves time travel stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm pretty sure Justin loves Red Mages, but
Red Mages are great. Sure.
Yep. There you go.
They're cool.
I'm actually playing a samurai. Justin is a huge fencer.
So. I thought I was going to be really into Red Mage, but I just happened to be close to the guy who gives you the samurai job when I started up the thing. So I just accepted. I just became a samurai and I started playing with it, and it's really fun.
Oh yeah. Let me tell you about a little known job called the Gladiator.
The Gladiator. Tell me. So how does tanking work?
It's great. You just hack away at dudes. I will say, I have literally played however many, hundreds, thousands of hours of Final Fantasy XIV have always been ranged spellcasting.
Yeah, yeah.
And so actually doing a melee character, like I told you when I first started, I was like mashing the attack button like, why is this all X'd out? And I was like, I need to be standing next to this enemy.
Yeah, that happened to me too, because I main a black mage and I started a black mage and did all that. But eventually I decided to try tanking. I started a warrior.
It's cool because it feels different. It feels different. It feels like an RPG. Now, Final Fantasy XIV to me feels like a unique being. Okay, Sid,
control yourself.
Doesn't care so bad that he's just watching YouTube videos over here.
I'll never admit to anything.
So Final
Show
Fantasy,
us what's on your phone right now.
What were you going to watch? I have to know now.
It's a certain game. I'll save it for a later.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
A mystery for another show.
Fair enough. Final Fantasy XIV now feels like a unique being to me. I don't like. Obviously, I compare it to all sorts of stuff. But are you laughing at me?
Sid, you can just leave the room if you'd like.
A little bit.
But when I picked up the Gladiator job, felt like an old school RPG where you're like going around and like using sword techniques and stuff and you got a little shield. It was just a quaint, you know, feeling and different style of gameplay, which I like. And
classic
just,
like sword and shield knight and go like
great.
Stab some
go
rats.
Do, go polish off those marmots that are all around old Duh or whatever they're called. Star marmots. Marmots.
Yeah.
That's enough.
I have a few, that
was a good chunk.
I have a few friends who I follow on Twitter who are into 14 as well. And they're starting to finish the story over the past few days. And every time one of them finishes a story, they tweet like, wow, go figure. Final Fantasy 14 is like my favorite Final Fantasy game now. Or go figure, like one of my favorite RPGs is an MMO expansion. That's crazy. Like, so I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, the story's already fantastic. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it all concludes.
Well, thank you very much for sharing. And Sid, I'll wrap up the show because someone doesn't even care anymore. ladies and gentlemen, that was our episode for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. You can send us feedback and questions. And remember those first gaming memories to blogcast@sony.com. Find us on PlayStation Blog, Twitter, Facebook, Google+, YouTube, Instagram, pretty much everything. Subscribe to us in iTunes and leave a review if you haven't already. We always appreciate those.
That's right. And we're available now on Spotify.
And on Spotify, yes. Yes,
and
please.
And Stitcher.
I assume you can leave reviews in Spotify?
You can like it and interact with
you
it.
You can follow it. I don't think they're
interface with it in some capacity.
Engage with it. Please
engage with us. Thank you to Dormilone for our theme song, Corey Schmitz for our logo, and we'll see you next week.